This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much, John, and good morning, everyone. It's perhaps unsurprising that a theme running through the last two presentations has been the challenging environment that higher education faces, both in fiscal and political terms. And it's that context which is going to frame the points that I'm making this morning. We know that our new government has placed control of public finances at the top of its agenda, and with the ink barely dry on the budget, we now have a slightly clearer view of how this government plans to tackle the deficit. And clearly, public services face a long and difficult road ahead, and higher education is in large part of that. So as well as looking at the new political environment, I'm going to touch on the financial situation that we face in the wake of yesterday's budget and the implications of the comprehensive spending review in October. Meantime, of course, it is essential that all of us continue to make the case for investment in higher education, as well as acknowledging that we are operating in a very different environment. And fundamental to Universities UK's approach to that is the primacy of autonomy. But of course, if we're talking about partly public funding, public funded autonomy, then with that comes a responsibility. And I'm therefore going to finish by touching on the question of the extent to which we as a sector must continue reshaping ourselves and our structures in response to these demands that we're all facing. But to begin with the broader political picture, so far, we've seen four key texts that perhaps indicate where higher education stands in the new government's thinking. The first is the coalition agreement itself, which sets out how the government is going to approach its planned five-year term. To that, we add the keynote speech that we've seen from Vince Cable, the Secretary of State at BIS. And we've also had two speeches from David Willetts, his higher education minister. And between them, these speeches give some indication of the priorities of the coalition government, but also the personal priorities of those two individuals and the new ministerial team. There's no doubt that higher education policy finds itself in this curious position of potentially making or breaking the new government, and that's evident even on the face of the coalition agreement. And it's hardly surprising that these tensions exist. The Liberal Democrats have been consistent opponents to tuition fees, which clearly is going to be such an issue with the arrival of the Brown Review later this year. The Lib Dem manifesto states, and I'm quoting here, that we will scrap unfair tuition fees for all students taking their first degree, including those studying part-time, and they say that that will be phased over 6 years and that they will immediately scrap fees for final year students. So this is not just a question of opposing any increase, it's scrapping all of them. And obviously, all members of the coalition government are having to compromise. That's the nature of the deal. But I don't know if any of you saw Danny Alexander on Newsnight last night being interviewed by Jeremy Paxman and the discomfort that he found himself in having to square what the new government was doing in fiscal terms with commitments given by the Lib Dems. And as I was watching that, I was thinking, my goodness, how are we going to, what are the sort of interviews like that we're going to be seeing when it comes to discussions about the implementation or otherwise of Lord Brown's recommendations on tuition fees? The Conservatives themselves, by contrast, are converts to tuition fees, and they've made it very clear that going into the election, they would wait for the outcome of the Brown Review, but the implication was that they would be open to supporting recommendations on tuition fees. The Labour Party certainly supported the Brown Review and made it clear when they were in government that they would be wanting to implement its recommendations in large part, though clearly none of us know, and neither did the Labour Party know what the recommendations will be. But of course, they may now find themselves in a very different position now that they're in opposition with different priorities and different objectives. Lord Brown, as we know, was given a very broad remit to examine the future of higher education funding and student finance. And indeed, we know that David Willetts himself, in opposition, argued for the scope of that review to be wide as possible. Brown's going to be reporting on October, and we clearly do not yet know what the recommendations will be. But nonetheless, looking at the various submissions made by a wide range of parties, the trend seems to be towards a remodelling of student support, which is extremely expensive, as Paul outlined, and also the possibility of an increase in graduate contributions. Note, not students paying tuition fees. That's never been the case, and it certainly shouldn't be in the future. We're talking here about graduate contributions stroke graduate tax, and the sooner we start using that more realistic vocabulary, the easier this discussion is likely to be. And certainly, judging by those range of submissions, it's Universities UK's position that recommendations along those lines urgently need to be taken and implemented in full, not in part. How the coalition government deals with those recommendations will be a critical test of its cohesion and its credibility. But looking at the coalition agreement itself may give us some grounds for hope, not so much to the extent what they say, to the extent that they refer to the Brown Review, but what they say about the role of higher education. They say, quote, "Universities are essential for building a strong and innovative economy, and the agreement pledges to take action to create more higher education places. The agreement states a desire to attract a higher proportion of students from disadvantaged backgrounds and to review support for part-time students. And a thread linking many of the issues in the coalition agreement is social mobility. There's a recognition, absolutely correct in Universities UK's view, that universities are a vital engine of social change, and that by equipping us to deal with the demands of tomorrow's economy, universities have the power to transform society and, most importantly, transform the power of individual students. And these two roles for higher education, to affect personal transformation and economic regeneration, underpin Universities UK's own approach to the role of higher education in our campaigns and our external communications about the value of higher education. We've repeatedly stressed the significance of the economic impact of higher education if we're not to fall behind competitor nations. We cannot afford to row back on the investment that has been made in universities. And that investment is both in the range of university activities, business engagements and so forth, and also investment in our students. So it's very significant to us that both those themes are very clearly reflected in the terms of the coalition agreement. And as the discussions leading to the production of that agreement emerged, it came clear how significant a document it was going to be. In effect, it's like a sort of post hoc manifesto that will be referred to repeatedly and perhaps have far more significance than the previous individual party manifestos. And it will be used to resolve internal disputes within the government. And it will be used by supporters and opponents alike to judge the government's performance and its promises against its delivery. And therefore, I think it's important for us to be looking very closely at that document and rehearsing and repeating the very valid and powerful arguments underpinning higher education in this country. Beyond the coalition agreement, both Vince Cable and David Willetts have given their indications of policy priorities. Vince Cable himself is a pivotal figure in the government. Some say he can cut a rather curmudgeonly figure, frustrated by the turn of events that have led him to lead one of the most important departments in government. Can I say, from the dealings that Steve Smith, President of the UK, and Vice-Chancellor of the University of Exeter and myself have had from him, that he is very determined and very focused on the job. And it's clear that, from his keynote speeches, that his main preoccupations will be with banks, industrial policy, and cutting costs. But nonetheless, his interest in higher education is manifest, and it's absolutely clear that he's not going to, he couldn't, abandon higher education entirely. All policies on higher education will have to be negotiated internally, and that inevitably will involve him as the minister in charge of the sector. I suspect his broad outlook on higher education is probably best captured in a phrase he used in his speech on the 3rd of June, that Philistinism is bad economics. But while Vince Cable is likely to concern himself with the higher-level political considerations, it's David Willetts who's going to be taking the lead in developing the government's approach to higher education. David is most definitely not a Philistine, as many of you who know him will be aware. He knows the higher education sector well and has very clear views on the way ahead. His speech at Birmingham University in May reiterated many of the themes that he has stressed in the past. He understands the significance of the university's world-leading reputation. He treasures quality. And most importantly, he is very preoccupied about the value of the student experience. In his more recent speech at Oxford Brookes, he made clear that he's got little time for arguments that criticise so-called Mickey Mouse degrees. He's far more interested, he says, in quality, the student experience and graduate outcomes than he is on what particular degree subjects are offered. Many of those Mickey Mouse degrees, so-called, actually providing extremely good outcomes for students. And this is all to be welcomed. But he's also challenged the sector to provide clearer information to students and potential students. And taken together, I think it means that in his view, we have to be absolutely clear about the value of the courses we offer. We are clear of the value. It's an issue in part on communicating how we communicate and who we communicate to. In the run-up to the election, David Willetts made the case for expanding student numbers, in itself significant. He offered an additional fully funded 10,000 additional student numbers this summer. And in his Oxford Brookes speech, he emphasised the trend that's taken root in this country since the war of increasing the number of young people pursuing post-16 education, and continued expansion of higher education is inevitably followed on from that. I don't get the feel from what he says that he takes a selective view of what higher education is about, that it's just the few, that it's just about the elite, not at all. I think he's very wedded for the wider view that universities play. So the broad outlines of the policy agenda are, I think, set. The government has committed itself to maintaining a high-quality education system, to increase participation in its broadest and widest sense, and to promote diversity of provision. The key issue, of course, is how all of this will be financed, how much the government will fund, and how much it has to be funded in other ways. And before I turn to how we might meet those aspirations, it is perhaps worth taking a moment to remember how we got to where we are now and to appreciate the scale of investment that the previous government made in higher education, that investment that must not be wasted or undermined from now on. In the last decade, we've secured widespread political recognition of the importance of higher education. The previous government really bought into that, and it's been accompanied by unprecedented political backing. The introduction of fees required considerable political capital investment by the previous government, but it wasn't just through the introduction of fees that they demonstrated that commitment. Steady growth in investment for teaching and even more dramatic increases in the funding of research, which broadly doubled, has to be acknowledged. And while I believe we have shown the direct link between that investment in public funding and improvements in the student experience and improvements in research, it's a case that always has to be articulated publicly. Earlier this year, we published at Universities UK a report making it count, which demonstrated how universities had used that funding, and in particular, how they'd used student fees. And this is a very live political issue, with accusations being made that fees have just gone on staff pay. Now, that's not true. Part of them did, but overwhelmingly what comes over from that document is the extent to which the contributions went towards improving the estate's infrastructure, student facilities, teaching facilities, staff-student ratios, and so on. Again, a narrative that we have to be articulating very loudly and clearly as we go forward. So what happens next? Well, I think while we make those points, we also have to make the point that was made previously, that we as a country spend less on higher education than our OECD average. And this contrasts to the extraordinary reputation and position we have in league tables and in terms of the UK brand. We are actually a very efficient sector. What we get produces quite significant results. And I think it's worth being very clear about this comparison with our competitor countries. We invest 1.3% of GDP in higher education, compared to the United States, which invests 2.9%, Canada 2.7%, Australia 1.6%, and so on and so forth. Now, these are the most recent OECD figures we have from 2009, but actually they reflect a previous reality, and I think since then the gap has probably widened even further. And Education Secretary Michael Gove has acknowledged this. In a speech he gave only last week, he pointed out that China and India are already turning out more engineers and more university graduates than the whole of Europe and America combined. And he asserted that the success of other nations in harnessing their intellectual capital is a function of their determination to develop world-beating education systems. So we have the commitment, in theory, from the new coalition government, and we have a decade of historic investment. We have our competitors investing heavily, but we also have a huge public sector deficit. And it's clear, not only as evidenced by yesterday's budget, but also by discussions and events that have taken place over the last few months, that we are talking about a very new reality. We have to acknowledge, as UK has, that we have to share as a sector our share of those cuts that need to be made to cut the public sector deficit. And we have to be alive to the potential scale and impact of them. But nonetheless, we have to make it absolutely clear to government and the public alike what the real impact will be of those cuts on the student experience, on people's children, on the research, on the business engagement that affects so many jobs regionally and nationally. The budget yesterday did speak, as we've heard, of a 25% cut to non-protected departments. That includes BIS. And the government has made it very clear that it's going to stick to its aim of eliminating the current structural deficit by 2015. We will know the details of this with a comprehensive spending review in October, and we'll get a clearer idea of what it means for higher education. But there is not an awful lot of biz outside higher education to cut. So I think we have to assume that whatever else happens, we are talking about significant cuts. And for your information, if we are talking about 25% of the higher education and science budget, which is broadly £14 billion. We're talking about a cut of £3.5 billion. These are very significant sums. And on top of that, of course, we mustn't forget that there was a 20% increase in VAT, which will also have a significant impact on universities' operating costs, reinforcing, actually, the barrier that the VAT charge places on shared services. But I'll come back to that very briefly at the end. So the risk is this. And this is a risk that Steve Smith has articulated very eloquently on so many occasions, that in working out how the government should allocate cuts in the CSR in October, that the government may bank potential income that they feel may be generated by the Brown Review. And indeed, for them, maybe Brown Review raises the joyful prospect of solving some of the fiscal deficit problems. And that might prompt deeper cuts than otherwise they might have made. But what if we end up taking those cuts, but the government then is politically unable to deliver the Brown recommendations? That would truly be devastating for the higher education sector if those cuts are implemented in full. It would be devastating to the diversity of mission and the values that Rob spoke so eloquently about. And it does really reinforce this rather apocryphal vocabulary that Steve speaks of in terms of the valley of death. We go down because of the cuts. Can we go up if there's no alternative method of funding the higher education system? Clearly, we're not there yet, and we continue to make the case for investment in higher education, and the commitment in the coalition agreement and the commitment by the various ministers are hugely significant. And it's important that we carry on making that case so the government understands the risks that we face to their own government investment in higher education if cuts of those sort are made. And those risks relate not just to the student experience, critical though that is, but to business engagement, to our international reputation, to social mobility, and so on. Many issues which are very dear to this government's heart. So, what we will do at Universities UK is continue to make that case very loudly and clearly, ensuring that all our arguments are strongly evidence-backed. We also, as a sector, need to look at increasing diversification of mission. That's something which is being openly discussed and no doubt will reappear in the discussions during the course of today. Rob himself spoke very well about that and the significance of diversity of mission, and clearly that's going to be something we're going to be discussing much more as we go forward. But thirdly, and again this will relate no doubt to issues we'll be discussing this afternoon, there is the question of the supply side of the bargain. If you invest in us, what do we do in return? And I mentioned at the beginning of my speech that the sector has to respond to this new environment, and indeed we are, and that means taking, for example, the efficiencies agenda extremely seriously. I think it has to be said, though, that universities do take efficiencies extremely seriously, and the changes that have been witnessed in the previous years are evidence of that. For example, in terms of shared services, it seems to be that we have perhaps one of the most effective national shared services system of any sector that I'm aware of. Look at UCAS, look at HESA, look at my background, the Equality Challenge Unit. These are phenomenally significant national shared services which support the higher education infrastructure to the most phenomenal degree, and indeed within universities and between universities we see all sorts of very effective shared services facilities crossing between universities and further education colleges, between universities and local and regional partners. And I think that's an area which is often overlooked in the sometimes old-fashioned ivory towers view of what universities are about. That's not the reality that I recognise when I see these sorts of sophisticated and imaginative efficiencies and shared services structures that are evident throughout the sector. However, we need to continue changing and adapting, and it's impossible, I think, to look at our current data systems, our industrial relations, our pay systems, our negotiating systems, our pension, without thinking that there is considerable scope for change and more that we can do. And certainly in relation to the shared services agenda, there's a lot more that the government can do to help us in terms of removing the barrier that VAT on shared services already is and will increasingly be now that it's raised to 20%. This agenda does, of course, present tremendous opportunities for those universities, many universities, who are agile enough to adapt. Conversely, within Universities UK, we are making this area of work, efficiencies, a priority over the next few months, and we are in the process of establishing a task group drawn widely from within the sector that will be chaired by Professor Ian Diamond from Aberdeen, who's going to steer our work that will look at what efficiencies there are, that look at what more we can do, and hopefully provide the impetus to support what universities are already doing. This is going to be a major plank of our work from now and into the autumn. We also, I think, need to make sure that the government's aware of the significant agenda in terms of cutting regulatory burdens. As I go around the country talking to universities, talking to vice chancellors, talking to staff, this is an issue that arises again and again. The sort of issues that the reports, the analyses, the data that has to be supplied to no obvious visible end, but nonetheless ties up piles of people within universities in complying with these sorts of requirements. And if the government wants us to be more agile and flexible, to operate more on a private sector model, then we must have our hands free to be able to compete on level playing field in those areas. And we need to look, for instance, at how the freedom of information system impacts on universities, and does it impact in a way that really achieves the objectives designed by that otherwise excellent piece of legislation? I think not. And we need to look more closely at how our immigration policies are affecting our recruitment of international staff and students, which militate against all the objectives that universities in the country think are important. And then, of course, we need to look at some of the systems which are not in themselves financially effective, which emanate from government, and the student support model is a very good example of that, the most expensive student support system in the whole world. That can't be right. So, pushing for these changes in all the different areas and articulating our case, as a sector, we have to hold firm to one guiding principle. And these are value principles that Rob referred to, which are very dear to universities and fundamental, axiomatic to Universities UK's area of operation, and that's the quality of the student experience. While discussing all these changes, we have to hold on to that. We have to protect the student experience and future student experience. That has to be at the centre of our approach, and there's no way that the sector would have it any other way. So to conclude, at Universities UK, we will continue to speak up for the huge contribution that universities make to our economy, to society, to individuals. And we will do that in part because we share the government's own aspiration for a diverse, transparent system that delivers to its full potential. We share many of the aspirations of the coalition agreement itself. That's a point that needs to be made loud and clear by all of us in advancing our arguments. But as part of the deal, fund us to achieve your aims, we need to embrace and continue to embrace the constructive changes that are already taking place in the university sector and take them further. But most of all, we've got to make clear that in articulating our case for higher education, that is because we have built a phenomenal success in the UK. We have a world-leading, high-quality university system that is the envy of many, and students, staff, and the wider society within the UK and without deserve to see that extraordinary jewel maintained in the future. Thank you very much.